With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is the Brian McClain Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome and thank you for joining me for this episode of the Brian McClain Show right here at today's News Talk, TNT Radio. We have a great power-packed hour set up for you. We're going to talk to Charlie Sauer. We're going to talk to Dr. Mark Richards and Mark Powell. It's going to be action-packed right here. Speaking of action-packed, this one just broke during the break here between shows. New York judge finds Donald Trump liable for fraud. Not just Donald Trump, but his adult sons liable for fraud, saying the Trumps provided false financial statements for roughly a decade. Judge Arthur Engoron's ruling came days before the civil case involving New York Attorney General's office and the former president was set to go to trial. The story is breaking. That's all I have for you about it right now. But is this back to the taxes? Are we back to tax stuff? You got to be kidding me, right? I mean, is Judge Arthur Engoron going to look at Joe Biden's tax records? I got to wonder. You know, look at Hunter Biden's tax records. I got to wonder. We could go on. I could name a number of Biden family members whose taxes and bank accounts maybe should be looked at. But hey, you know how it works in America these days, right? Well, speaking of America, what's going on in Denver? Well, radio host and president of the Independence Institute in Denver, John Caldera. I hate to read this; it's a little crass, but he scooped up poop from a homeless person found outside his business, and relocated it to the steps of the Denver City and county building. And yes, this is on video. Video captured the moment that Caldera pulled off the smelly stunt, and it went quickly viral. So the fact that that went viral says something. And I don't know, is this the kind of political activism that we need in this day and age? I don't know if it's what we need, but it's definitely what we have. So I guess shout out to John Caldera. All right. Biden administration awards a $2 billion loan for Poland to modernize its army. And this is interesting because this move comes as scandals are being shown right now to show squalid and grotesque conditions in some American military institutions. That's a problem. Kind of reminds me of all the money going to Ukraine when we look at places like East Palestine or Maui, perhaps. So the Biden administration announced they're offering a $2 billion loan to Poland, an important ally, which has been a hub for weapons going into Ukraine to support the military defense modernization there in Poland. So the Associated Press reported that the State Department said in a statement that Poland is a stalwart ally of the U.S. whose security is vital to the collective defense of NATO's eastern flank, and that such funding is reserved for Washington's most important security partners. Yeah, well, we know that this is a hub for most of the Western weapons that are going to the Kiev regime, so it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on that. But there you go, more money going to foreign militaries, while our own is absolutely in need of update, big time. And let's see here. Two parents in Virginia Beach have filed a lawsuit against their school board. This is great. For refusing to enact Republican Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin's new model policies for handling transgender students. The model policies direct teachers to refer to transgender students by their biological sex and birth name unless parents agree in writing to any changes. They also require students to play on sports teams based on their biological sex. How bigoted? Can you imagine that? Oh my goodness, how dare they? No, in all seriousness, the lawsuit states that the parents want to protect their children from being compelled to use biologically inaccurate names and pronouns, forced to use bathrooms and locker rooms with members of the opposite sex, or required to pretend during athletic competition that gender identity can override the enduring physical differences between boys and girls. So there you go. Much like the gun control arguments, this one is going to go on and on. It's going to go back and forth. We're too far culturally to not have issues like this. But luckily, we have some people like Youngkin who seem to get it. Now, we'll have to keep an eye on this one because these kind of things are just going to keep happening. Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio? Do you think we're doing a good job? We'd love it if you let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or a comment on Facebook, Gab, or Gitter, or any of the other social feeds that we're on? We're on just about all of them. So help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Your news, local and abroad.
It's the news from home and from overseas.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
FTC sues Amazon for illegally maintaining monopoly power as Amazon's ongoing pattern of illegal conduct blocks competition, allowing it to wield monopoly power to inflate prices, degrade quality with all their cheap Chinese stuff coming from Alibaba and all that, and stifle innovation for consumers and businesses. So this is actually a pretty big story. And I cannot wait to discuss it with our first guest here, Charles Sauer. Charlie, welcome to the Brian McClain Show. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me back on.
Hey, it's great to see you again and hear your voice. What do you think about what's going on here? What's the going on behind the scenes with this FTC suit?
Well, I think that this is why smaller government is better government. Lena Khan, when she was in college, wrote a paper called The Amazon Antitrust Paradox. And of course, that's a play off of, or The Amazon Paradox, which is a play off Bork's The Antitrust Paradox. And she wrote that in 2015. It gained traction and she spent her career working towards this moment where she could be the head of the FTC and file suit against Amazon, her nemesis in life. And we see this government big booted bureaucrat wanting to put their foot on the throat of a U.S. business. And I think it's bad for the economy. I think it's bad for Americans. And I think it's something that the government shouldn't do. And unfortunately, we've seen bipartisan support for this over the last couple of years, but we have seen pushback in the last couple of months. And I think that that's a good sign.
They're saying that anti-discounting measures that punish sellers and deter other online retailers from offering prices lower than Amazon, keeping prices higher for products across the internet. For example, if Amazon discovers that a seller is offering lower priced goods elsewhere, Amazon can bury discounting sellers so far down in the search results that they become effectively invisible. What do you think about that aspect?
I mean, I start off with if a business wants to, a private business, a non-government run business should be able to do whatever it is that they want to. And then sellers can choose to sell on that platform or not. But I also don't think that that's actually Amazon's pricing structure, at least currently. I believe they started that way. I'm not sure when they changed it. But look, if you are, let's say you're Lego and you're selling a dollar Lego and other people are selling it cheaper on Amazon, then your dollar Lego is going to get buried because they're going to deliver a lower price when they can to the customers. So, I mean, there's all sorts of different pieces in this. But like Lena Khan doesn't like the fact that you have Amazon Prime, that some sellers will pay Amazon to actually house their goods so that we can get it same day within the hour or in their 2-day delivery window. And Lena Khan doesn't like that. She thinks that Amazon should run their company differently. I'm okay with Lena Khan thinking that, but the way that that should work is that she should go start her own business and do that instead of using the government power to go after a private business. That's not how this should work. If Amazon thinks that that's what customers want and that's what customers will keep coming back to their site, that's what should be allowed. We shouldn't have this idea of defining a nemesis in college, going after them by getting a government slot and then going after the company. That's not good, not just for Amazon. That's not good for the guy who's starting the next Amazon. Because look, Amazon can defend themselves. Amazon is a large company. They'll come out of this okay. But the fact is when you go to start that next company, you're having to look and say, hey, the government can come after me. I've got to put more money back just to wait for that. The investors that are looking at that company say, you know what? Maybe I'm not going to invest as much money because the government might come after us, or maybe I'm not going to invest at all. So what we see here isn't really an Amazon problem. I don't care what people think about Amazon. I like Amazon. They deliver most of my stuff to me and they do it quickly, but I don't care and it shouldn't matter to anybody. The fact here is that the government is stopping business and they're stopping it in America. That's not what we need right now. We have enough worker strikes going on. One of the good companies shouldn't be being attacked.
Yeah, you know, say what you will about everything being offshore to China. I'm not a big fan of that. But at the same time, it's you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That is the situation that we're in right now. And the fact of the matter is a lot of the products that come from some Chinese manufacturing agencies are not bad. You know what I mean? There are obviously, like, if I'm going to go buy something that I'm passionate about, that I know Americans are making here in America with American parts, like I'm a knife enthusiast, for example. I don't buy Chinese knives anymore. I buy American knives made with American, you know, steel and put together by American workers. And it costs me a little more, but I feel good about it. But then if I have to order, you know, a new light for my rig or something like that, that's probably going to come from Amazon or something that's competing with Amazon that has those, you know, Alibaba sort of sellers on them. And then you think about all the Americans, there's a huge movement in social media and in entrepreneurial realms that teaches Americans how to utilize these systems in a way that they can become entrepreneurial and make money for themselves. If the government starts doing this to Amazon, how does that affect people like that, do you think?
Well, I was going to say, I actually order a lot of American-made goods off of Amazon and even do that instead of some of the companies because I can get it faster. Those companies are already paying Amazon to store their goods. So you can actually search for the brands you want and get them to your door and you just get them faster. And if I'm not paying shipping, I usually get them cheaper. So, I mean, yes, there are Chinese goods on Amazon, but there's more of them on Alibaba and Walmart and some of the other sites. But again, I think that, you know, I find it hard because this is not an Amazon commercial. This is anti-government. But when you look at Amazon's website, it's a place that small businesses can go and not just sell now in, you know, Des Moines, Iowa, but they can sell across the country. I think it's an amazing platform that's changed the way that small businesses can actually sell goods. My daughter makes a hairpiece that I'm looking at seeing how we can put it onto Amazon so that she can have a broad market. My book, which I wrote now a few years ago, was in the bookstores, was in Barnes & Noble, was at libraries. And realistically, the only place that you can find my book now is on Amazon. So I think that it provides a platform that allows entrepreneurs to sell more widely than they have in the past. And I think that other platforms will catch up to them. But I know the way where platforms won't catch up to them. And that's if we have the government come in and add in more regulation. At that point, the only people that can keep up are the people that already have the legal departments in place, that already have the investments and the market share in place. Because at that point, it's too hard to get the money to make that government leap over the regulatory burden that will be in place if the government wins in this case.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I'm looking at this and I'm just kind of scanning it and I'm doing like a Mad Libs thing here in my mind. And every time I see Amazon, I'm replacing it with something like, I don't know, Facebook or Verizon or something like that. And I'm looking at the complaints here and it's like, well, where are all the FTC suits against some of these other companies? You know, you could easily graft this onto a lot of other really big, you know, Fortune 100 giants right now.
Well, look, they talk about Amazon degrading search results, which means if you are on Amazon and you search for toilet paper, that the FTC's issue is that you will get ads inside of your search results for toilet paper that they don't deem the best. But these are people that have paid for ads. This is also the way that the internet itself runs. When you Google something, there's ads. And all of that is disclosed because Amazon also doesn't want to push you towards bad products, because you know what will make a customer run away faster than anybody else, and that's bad toilet paper, right? So you don't want your customers to not like or not know what you're doing. But the fact is that good toilet paper that is paying for ads will end up near the top, because if they are selling through those ads and people like it and keep coming back, then that company is going to keep spending money on ads. So there's even good pieces to this, but the FTC just doesn't like Amazon. Lena Khan, the head of it, hasn't liked them since the beginning. And I mean, let's give her props for writing a college paper and then making it to the chair of the FTC. But this isn't the way that we should be hiring people in government, is if their grudge is big enough and important enough that this is the single life's goal, is to take down a company.
Absolutely. Grudge matches belong in wrestling, not like this. All right, Charlie, we're out of time. Marketinstitute.org. Charlie Sauer, founder and president over there at Market Institute. Thank you so much for your time, Charlie, and I'll look forward to speaking to you again next time right here on TNT.
You should hear what Kate Shimarani is talking about.
In the UK, they've announced in the press this week, can you believe it, that they've got a drug, of course they have, for insomnia. Insomnia means you can't sleep. And anyone who knows that when you go to the doctor in this country, onto the National Homicide Service, yes, I said that, you sit in the waiting room, it's like being at the dole office, and you wait till your ticket comes up and you get 5 minutes. So you've got to leg it to the room and sit down quickly, and he's already tapping on his computer, getting you a drug and getting you out that door. That's how your appointments go. There is about 5 minutes allotted. People come to me with insomnia, and I spend a lot of time with them going through, what do they eat? What do they do before they go to bed at night? Have they got any LED lights in their bedroom? Have they got their Wi-Fi on? And I can tell you, when you start to address all of that, then you get to the root cause of their insomnia. But no, no, no. They're going to prescribe you a drug called daridorexant, I think it's called. I was horrified. One of the things that drug can give you is suicidal thoughts. Suicidal thoughts, mental illness, depression, drug or alcohol abuse or addiction. And when I think about all the kids that have got insomnia that are at university, these are the last things they need.
Kate Shimarani on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We've come so far as a nation. We are the envy of the world. And our future is limited only by our belief in each other.
Now we have a choice to make. Do we give in to guilt and division, or do we say no?
No to those who want to divide us.
I've decided to vote no because the voice will divide us.
No to those people who think all Indigenous Australians think the same.
We are not all the same, and there's a lot of us Aboriginal people that are voting no.
No to those who want to change the rule book of the country.
Why let them divide us? Because we are all Australians.
We are one mob.
Come on, Australia. Let's stay united.
Vote no to the voice of division.
Authorised by Matthew Sheehan, Advance Australia, Canberra.
The conversation continues.
How ridiculously complicated they've tried to make this global warming argument.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, 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 after the last 3 years and everything that's been said about health, about, you know, about vaccines and mRNA technologies being sold as vaccines, a lot of the American public really sort of leans into that appeal to authority, right? We think about this so much. We think about, well, I don't know about these things. These are molecular things. These are microscope things. These are lab coat things and beakers and Bunsens and all this stuff. And I really need someone's expert advice on this. And we have this mainstream media, this mass media cartel apparatus, this machinery that is just pounding into our heads, safe, effective, necessary, words like this. But it really makes one wonder what's going on when it comes to some of these research papers, and you know, peer-reviewed studies, things like this. Well, a growing wave of volunteers are exposing faulty or fraudulent research papers. An award-winning Harvard Business School professor and researcher spent years exploring the reasons people lie and cheat. A trio of behavioral scientists examining a handful of her academic papers concluded her own findings were drawn from falsified data. Isn't this fun? I'm joined by Dr. Mark Richards. Dr. Richards, can you fill us in a little bit about this? Because I'm always curious how this works, because we really put on a pedestal the idea of a double-blind test and, you know, peer-reviewed science. What's going on in the background?
Sadly, Brian, there's a lot going on in the background. As you know, I think you've read my book, Nobody Wants You Healthy, Achieving Better Health by Avoiding the Medical Corruptions in Science. And it's a long story. Science has been corrupted for a long time. It's just gotten worse and worse over time as the dollars have gotten larger and larger. And it's not a grand conspiracy, I like to say. It's more corporations and individuals acting in their own best interest, which means they'll falsify the data, they'll cherry pick their statistical methods, they will exclude patients from a trial that didn't get the result they wanted. And you're asking, how can that happen? You know, don't we have federal agencies that oversee this? And we do have federal agencies, that's for darn sure. How much they oversee it is a question at times. Sometimes they do good and sometimes they don't. And part of the reason is when you have over 75% of the medical science and basic science peer-reviewed journal articles being false, not reproducible in an independent lab, then what's the ground you stand on to judge whether a drug or a treatment is actually really effective? So the pharmaceutical industry funds the FDA, and the pharmaceutical industry funds NIH, and the NIH scientists share in the intellectual property rights of any drugs that the pharmaceutical industry research at NIH develop that goes into mainstream sales. So you have a lot of people pulling out of this tin, and the researchers, maybe they're independent researchers, but they're paid by a company to do a research on their product. And if they happen to get a favorable research report, then they're going to get the next research grant from that company as well. If they don't get a favorable research report, then maybe they don't get that grant from that company. So even independent scientists can get swayed because they need to fund their labs and their family and a salary and pay for college tuition and all those other things. At the end of the day, the sad truth is oftentimes when a drug company takes a drug to the FDA, they have to accept the biostatistics and stats from the research article that the drug company presents. They really don't have the capability to do their own research or even look at their own data. One of the articles, you mentioned one of them, where a group called Data Collada was going through the various keynote science articles that research is based upon and found out they were fraudulent. There was a Swedish woman who's math genius and has a master's in public health, I believe. And she went through the original Israeli data on the COVID vaccine. And she said they made serious mathematical mistakes in the denominator of the paper, which completely changed the results. So in her interpretation, it shows that the vaccine complications were at higher rate than getting infected with the COVID virus complications. And so she published that. I'm sure she's, you know, getting all sorts of professional pushback and maybe death threats, but it was as simple as taking the original study and then dissecting the data and doing a proper mathematical analysis. That's why you have people from Stanford, chair of biostatistics, boarded in infectious disease, a couple of them actually, John Ioannidis and Jay Bakhtiara, who have been pretty adamant that the data doesn't support what the government's been pushing. So there's causes for concern. I'm not going to stand here and tell you one thing's absolutely true and another thing's not true because, you know, I'm basing it on science and I already know that 75% of it's false. But I think there's causes for concern. And as the data comes in of populations across the world, from Britain to Italy to Australia to New Zealand, we're seeing the results that we didn't expect and certainly didn't want.
Yeah, and it's really frustrating when you start thinking about all of those vested interests. You mentioned the pharmaceutical industry funding FDA and NIH. I mean, one would hope and think that our federal regulatory industries would be regulated themselves in a way that would not allow them to share in intellectual property rights, much less the next thing I want to ask you about, which I'll go ahead and hand you, but we're going to take a brief headline before you answer. So I'm also curious about the revolving doors. Not only do we see, as you laid out right there with FDA, NIH, intellectual property rights, we also see people from FDA all of a sudden, you know, becoming a C-level executive at places like Pfizer's, your Moderna's, you know, all these places in big pharma. So I'll take your thoughts on that after a brief headline here with today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I got a news flash for you.
News flash! TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. An explosion at a crowded gas station in Nagorno-Karabakh resulted in the tragic deaths of at least 20 people and left nearly 300 others injured. This incident occurred as thousands of people rushed to flee into Armenia, as reported by separatist authorities in the region on Tuesday. 1 in 10 prisons in England and Wales should be closed down, says the chief inspector of prisons. Charlie Taylor told The Guardian there were a lot of inner-city local prisons that won't be closed anytime soon, but they really struggle to fulfill their purpose.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Nobody wants you healthy. Achieving better health by avoiding the corruptions in modern medical science is available right now by my guest, Dr. Mark Richards. Now, Mark, what do you think about that? The fact that we live in a system that will not only allow regulators to profit, but does not have any problem with them then becoming, you know, a CEO or a C-level person or over at some of these companies.
Well, Brian, that's certainly a big part of the corruption in modern medical science. It happens. I think there was only one head of the FDA that didn't get a C-suite job at pharma in the last 30 years.
Wow.
It gets worse than that, though, Brian, because pharma is the largest donor to lobbying campaigns for politicians by a factor of two than any other organization in the world. So it's not hard for them to get their paid politicians to go behind anything that they support. And then you have appointees at the CDC, for example, or FDA, having to answer to the politicians that appointed them as well. And when you add all that into the mix, it gets very dicey. It would take somebody of extraordinary moral compass and ethics to actually lead these agencies the way it should be run. And they'd have to be willing to be beat up and fired, because when they refuse to do things like has been done, I'm sure their usefulness will expire and they'll find some reason to get rid of them.
Yeah. And I mean, also the fact that I used to do research on the government side, and I worked at sort of the academic level. You know, I worked with a group of professors and researchers and academics and industry partners, and we basically served as an independent assessment team for new technologies that were, you know, potentially going to be fielded into the military, into government, you know, into first responders and things like that. And we would invite industry partners to come out, show off their wares. We would, you know, deploy it in a semi-operational environment. And then we would assess it. You know, we, the group of academics that did not, were not getting money from the people that actually made the product. Isn't there a fundamental, and by the way, that ended when they started shutting the door on us, and exactly this started happening. The assessors ended up being the people that were working with the producers, you know, of you know, Widget X. So, I mean, isn't this a fundamental problem when you're trying to field something, especially for human health?
Well, it is. You know, if you take something like the Defense Department, you know, the generals that are making the decisions about which weapon systems to buy end up frequently becoming C-suite executives at the defense company that whose product they had approved. You know, it's that's why I said it's not a conspiracy. It's just people and corporations acting badly. Somehow, we need to take the what a lot of people call the administrative state and make them totally independent. We need to have maybe people of unassailable credentials say, okay, you know what, you have 4 years. This is your job. You have 4 years. You can't profit from this industry afterwards. You can't get a job in the industry afterwards. And you have to agree to that, and then we'll make sure you're taken care of in your retirement. But we need data that, to be honest. And so you have weird things happening, like when the FDA approved the COVID vaccine for children, they literally had, I don't know, 8 mice, 10 mice saying, oh, it worked in adults, it'll work in children. Well, that statement was weird on two aspects. Giving vaccines to children is a lot different than giving vaccines to adults. So mice, I don't think, are the best test. And the second thing is, they're saying it was working on adults. And the Cleveland Clinic had come out with a study of its 52,000 employees. And in their study over a 190-day period, the people that weren't vaccinated, 2% got COVID. The people that were double vaccinated, 5% got COVID. The people who were boosted once on top of that, 7% got COVID. They're boosted twice, 9% got COVID, and they're boosted three or more times, and 11% got COVID. So I don't know, maybe the people that got vaccinated were much sicker and more susceptible or whatever. I mean, I can't dissect all that data. But when you look at 52,000 people and they're all employees, so I assume they're all over 21, it's a cause for concern. You know, that's why people like Harvey Reich, who's a professor emeritus at Yale of epidemiology, said, we need to just do a hard stop on these vaccines now. You know, the spokesman and the head of the public health system in national health system in Britain, SEMA, you know, he said, we need to do a hard stop on this now. What's his name? Macquarie, who's a master of public health and endocrinology surgeon from Johns Hopkins, said the government was the biggest supplier of misinformation during the entire COVID crisis, and we need to have a hard stop on this now. Now, nobody can tell you 100% that the vaccine wasn't worth it in certain groups of people, but we can tell you already 100% that when the Stanford Department of Biostatistics, using CDC data, says that children have a 3 in a million chance of dying from COVID, that there is no vaccine on earth and maybe no medicine on earth that would justify giving the child to prevent a 3 in a million occurrence, which is close to zero. So it's just, this was not making sense. It doesn't make sense. I don't understand it. And of course, you know, everybody's getting their money trickled down from the vaccine manufacturers. And in my book, which people can go to nobodywantsyouhealthy.com, by the way, and see podcasts and see interviews like the one I'm doing with you, and also buy the book if they want. I don't touch COVID because it was a censorable discussion. You know, when I wrote to the newspapers in beginning of April, end of March in 2020, looking at all the science data and all the papers, and I outlined each of the papers from 2012 all the way through the Wuhan area COVID, you could see exactly where this virus manufacturing started at UNC. You can see how the politicians responded. You can see how the Pasteur Institute in France called it abominable research, because if it ever escaped the lab, it caused a pandemic of unknown consequences. And it kept on going. And then Obama banned all gain-of-function research on U.S. soil. But Fauci, the head of infectious disease at NIH or DOD, could do it if they thought it was a national security overseas. So, of course, who funded that Wuhan lab was NIH and DOD. Even DARPA, who looked at it, who I have a lot of respect for DARPA, they have great scientists there, said, we are not funding this. This is way too dangerous. We're not doing it over there. But, you know, they could reach into black budgets. They could just go ahead and authorize it on their own, and they did. And then if you said that it came from the lab, you were censored. You were considered crazy. You were spreading misinformation. You know, you could hear from your medical board. You'd certainly hear from the federal government, and they wouldn't publish it in any of the newspapers. But to say that the place where they were researching bat viruses with SARS spikes, and the co-author of Ralph Baric's article at UNC in Nature Medicine in 2015 with Xi Jinping of the Wuhan lab, to say that miraculously this exact virus escaped in Wuhan and it came from a meat market, I mean, I'm sorry, there's very few people with an IQ low enough to believe that.
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. We're just about out of time, but I'm going to read you a quick quote here, and I'll take a brief answer on it if you can. Now, it's amazing to me that this is all being, actually, it's not too amazing. It's staggering. I kind of expected it, but they're trying to ramp all this back up again. And here's a quote from Dr. Mandy Cohen, director of the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Quote, teen boys have been up to 5 times as likely to have heart inflammation after having a COVID infection than after getting vaccinated, end quote. Can you speak to that real briefly?
Yeah, I can speak to that. I'd love to see that data. I really would love to see that study, because every other study that's been published shows that the risk in children of heart inflammation, actually the risk in adults, far exceeds that of COVID. There was a study that came out that showed, it was a Swiss study, it showed that 3% of adults in a health center getting vaccinated, 3% of them had the heart muscle enzyme circulating in their blood after the vaccination, which means the heart muscle had rupture. So that's 3% of them. It was like 3.7% of the women and almost 1% of the men. So, you know, it's not everybody, but that's a pretty big number. So a Thai study looked at children. And in the Thai study, they looked at them for 2 weeks after their vaccination, monitored EKG, blood pressure, all sorts of things. And 30% of them had some effect on the cardiovascular system after getting shot with COVID. So the actual COVID-induced myocarditis has been very rare when looked at by the experts in the field, the people at Yale, the people at Hopkins, the people at Stanford. The disease-caused myocarditis is pretty rare. And one last point before we leave, there was a study that was an Italian and British study that looked at COVID spikes, which cause inflammation inside your body. And the COVID spikes after vaccination were present 28 days later in 50% of the people getting vaccinated. So this is a prolonged amount of inflammation, which sets up for chronic diseases that I talk about in my book, which include, you know, cardiovascular diseases.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And I really appreciate everything you've done, everything you're doing. Keep up the great work. We love having you here on today's News Talk. Nobody wants you healthy. Achieving better health by avoiding the corruptions in modern medical science, by Dr. Mark Richards, our wonderful guest here. And note, he didn't even have to go into the COVIDian era. This is important context for you to have. So I highly recommend you get out there, get the book, visit the website. Dr. Mark Richards, I'll look forward to having you back on the Brian McLean Show here on TNT Radio again.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
We've heard it repeated over and over by the left-wing media. If poor Hunter Biden, who has battled drug addiction, wasn't the president's son, he never would have been charged with lying on his application to get a gun or on tax evasion charges. And how many times have we heard that Joe just loves his son so much that he would call him every day? And it just so happened that it included phone conversations while Hunter was meeting with business interests. Nothing to see here. No evidence, says the media. Well, thankfully, the American public isn't fooled. According to last week's Economist YouGov poll, few Americans, 12%, have even a somewhat favorable opinion of Joe Biden's son Hunter. As for his recent indictment on charges stemming from a gun purchase back in 2018, 60% of Americans approve and 18% disapprove. And only 9% believe that Joe Biden hasn't profited personally during his time as president. Americans also approve of the House opening an impeachment inquiry of Joe Biden, 45-40%. Message to the media: you need to work harder on behalf of your radical leftist agenda. The public isn't buying it. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The lack of civilian access to working group meetings on the WHO pandemic treaty is a concern. Another is the degree to which the World Health Organization will no longer be making recommendations to member countries, but dictating to them. Astrid Stuckelberger, a scientist at the Institute of Global Health of the Faculty of Medicine of the University of Geneva and former employee of WHO, said in March 2021 that the 194 member countries are not voting on whether they agree on the pandemic treaty. Instead, they are legally bound to concede to its framework. This delegation, put together to draft the pandemic treaty, has been embedded in the constitution of WHO and is immediately approved by 194 member states, regardless of whether they adopt its principles. This delegation is legally binding according to the international health regulations.
Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
We need to talk about Illinois a little bit. It's been 2 years since the Pretrial Fairness Act was passed, but there's still a lot of questions about who will be jailed and who will not, as Illinois has become the first state to completely remove cash bail as a condition to be released ahead of criminal trial. This is a very, very interesting development in our country, and we're going to be joined by a media commentator in the areas of law enforcement, education, and real estate, Mark Powell. Mark, it's great to see you. Thank you for joining me today. What do you make of this no bail? I have a hard time understanding how this is going to be a good thing for society. Like, bail reform, I understand, but straight no bail? I mean, how is this going to work?
Brian, first, thanks for having me on. And as a former police officer, I understand what it takes to arrest somebody. There's paperwork involved. Sometimes it's a dangerous situation. Sometimes you're in a fight with the suspect and you get them to the jail, you book them in, and they're supposed to stay in there for some period of time. So they used to have, well, they still do, it's called being released on your OR, own recognizance. And oftentimes people who have very low-level crimes are released on their own recognizance with a promise to appear. And typically, you know the person, you have some identification, a driver's license, a state ID, something that has a face on it with information regarding the person who's been arrested. However, in this situation, unless the person is a serious violent offender or an absolute flight risk, there's no bail. But it's for the entire state. So can you imagine the frustration that the police officers are going to feel when they arrest somebody on the street just to turn around and drive back the next day and see them back on the streets? It's no way to support a community, especially the communities that these people are preying on.
And doesn't this, I noticed a headline earlier this week or late last week about a woman who assaulted a cop, I think in Chicago, and then was immediately out under this, this new stipulation, this new legislation, and did another crime. I mean, doesn't that kind of, what does that do to the law enforcement officer? I mean, you mentioned sometimes it's difficult to take someone into custody. Sometimes people are intoxicated. Sometimes people aren't right in the head. Sometimes they want to commit suicide by cop in this day and age, and there's a struggle that happens. I mean, what does that do to the morale of the police officer that literally just had to fight someone to bring them in, alive, and then they're just let go with no bail?
Well, it's abundantly apparent what it does, because we have a national police shortage. They can't recruit enough officers to do this job anymore for multiple reasons. One, the pay is not where it should be for police officers. Second, the job in itself inherently is dangerous. In addition to it being dangerous, police officers have body cameras on themselves. So if it's perceived that they've done something in violation of a person's rights, let's say they make a mistake. And police officers are human beings, they're going to make a mistake. They tend to lose not only their job, They tend to be, they can be incarcerated, they can be sued civilly. There's no safeguards in place anymore for police officers. So it makes it a very challenging job. But this is where I wanted to give a little bit of information on. Currently at the border, there are millions of people. There are literally millions of people who are in the United States. We don't know who they are. Now, I'm going to suspect the vast majority of these people are good people. They're coming across the border to seek a better life, for the American dream, for opportunity. However, there's an element in any society that's criminal. And there's many people living on the streets in Chicago. From what I last heard, it was 13,000 people living on the streets. These are, you can call them asylum seekers or refugees or people that are just looking for a better way of life. Now, if you're on the street and you have no means of support, you don't have a job, what are you left to do? Some will turn to crime because they were criminals in their own country. Now you're going to take these people, put them in jail, and you really don't know who they are. Let them go just to go off and prey on people again, not knowing who they are and not even knowing what state they're going to end up in.
Right. You've got this situation where people are going to, it's kind of a multifold situation. Just to name a couple, you've got people that are coming here who owe a debt to cartel members, perhaps, and they're not necessarily going to be operating within the law. Like, they could fall through the cracks on this and be able to commit multiple crimes over and over again. You've also got people that, like you say, are just on the streets, and what are they going to do? I mean, you hustle. If you're on the streets and you can't get a job, you're going to start hustling, and hustling turns into, you know, criminal activity. And then you've got, you know, children that aren't eating. You've got parents that are trying to figure out how to feed their kids. There's just a whole, you know, a range of things that could lead to this kind of, you know, criminal behavior. And on top of that, we're talking about countries like Chile and Haiti. In Haiti is a failed state right now. They're literally ruled by cartel gangs, and the citizens have had to form machete gangs to try to defend themselves. And why would those people not come to the United States? In Chile, there are burglary rings that are coming here to the United States. There are criminal enterprise business opportunities that are drawing people like a moth to a flame, wouldn't you say?
I agree 100%. And also, Brian, think about this. Bail was the system to guarantee someone would show up in court. It, because there was a monetary tie to it. Typically, if your bail, let's say, is $5,000, you're going to post a $500 bond. And if you don't return back, whoever posted that bond has to pay the $5,000. So this developed into the bail bonds industry, and also the people that recover, the bail bondsmen who go out and try and bring these people back to court. Now, if there's no bail and somebody jumps bail bondsmen, they're not going to go out and try and find these people anymore. They're just free to roam around the country as they please, with absolutely no motivation for them to appear in court. It's creating a failed criminal justice system. As far as the courts go, law enforcement, police, courts, and corrections, they're all going to suffer from this no bail policy.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I got to admit a little bit of ignorance here on this, but, you know, my understanding of the bail bondsman industry goes about as far as Dog the Bounty Hunter. I'm guessing Dog the Bounty Hunter won't be taking any gigs in Illinois anymore. But what does that do to the entire industry? I mean, does that actually shut an industry down? These are important people, right? I mean, law enforcement, they sort of rely on bail bondsmen to an extent, right?
Well, yes. When a bail bondsman goes out to find a fugitive who has not shown up in court, they're given a directive from a judge that says, bring this person back to my court. They didn't show up. You can't just not show up to court. You have to show up to court. But if they post no bail, a bail bondsman isn't a voluntary position. They're just not going to go out and risk their life to bring somebody to justice as a volunteer. They have to get paid for the risk that they take. And without having that bail money, there's no incentive for them. So yes, it could potentially shut down the bail bondsman industry in the entire state of Chicago, not just a city.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And what about the criminals themselves? I would imagine you probably know a lot more about recidivism and all this than I do, but I would imagine that when someone commits a crime and they're put in jail, you know, or, you know, there's that financial attachment that we're talking about there, there is an attitude adjustment that comes along with that. So since that's no longer there, is this actually going to have a reverse effect? Is this going to, in some cases, embolden or even incentivize further criminal behavior?
Well, absolutely. Think about it. If you commit a crime and nothing happens to you, and you're a criminal, because that's the definition of a criminal, people who commit crimes, you're just going to go out and commit more crimes. But what happens is, as they get more emboldened, they take bigger risks. Let's say they're shoplifting. Now they're shoplifting more. Now they're doing some robberies. Now they're doing some purse snatches. Now they're mugging people. Now they're carjacking people. It just keeps moving up the chain. So if someone is committing a crime, the best course of action is to incarcerate them, is to make them pay restitution for the crime that they committed. And then if there's any hope of rehabilitation, hopefully rehabilitate that person and maybe give them a trade or a skill that they can use once they get out of jail or prison.
And what about the dangers of selective enforcement as far as bail go? You know, you talked about being released on your own recognizance, unless it's a violent offense or a flight risk. But I've seen a number of cases out here in Austin, Texas, and Dallas, where from, you know, the casual observer, reader of the news and, you know, of the story, it's like, well, that sounded like a violent offender. And, you know, right. D.A. Garza just cut him right loose. Didn't, you know, a flight risk. I've seen those too. Is there a danger of selective enforcement when it comes to these definitions?
Well, I'll give you an example of a person who is typically released on their own recognizance. The guy who's so drunk, they can't take care of themselves, the welfare of themselves or others. The person that's in a bar and he's stumbling around, or maybe is about to get in a bar fight and causing problems, they're typically taken to jail. They're allowed to sober up. And once they're sober, a lot of them just were in some type of a drunken stupor, and they're released. They don't want to keep a drunk in jail. However, if someone is involved in a serious fight where somebody's injured, maybe not seriously injured, but somebody's injured, that person may very likely just be released and say, well, he was in a fight, you know, he's no danger. Well, he's no danger now, but what about the next fight he's in? And that's what you hear. Oh, that person was arrested multiple times for disorderly conduct or fighting, and the next one results in serious bodily injury or death. And they're saying, well, why didn't this guy ever do a day in jail? Well, he was released. He was released on bail.
Yeah. And how does this work as many of our cities, Chicago, I'm sure, also are being flooded with illegal migrants? You know, how does that affect the you know, illegal immigration wave and the way people are choosing to spend their time?
Well, it's heartbreaking, because these criminals that are coming across the border not only prey on United States citizens, they prey on the people that are in the streets. They don't care who they're attacking or who they're shaking down or who they're robbing. So it puts the honest migrants that are on the street in risk. It puts the police in risk. It puts American citizens in risk. And so you have to take a step back and look at the administration and go, hey, what are the unintended consequences of having an open border? I mean, we already know there's dozens of people that came across the border that are on a terrorist watch list, and they're just walking across. Who knows how many, they're called gotaways. Who knows how many gotaways are here right now plotting whatever they're going to plot. They've done it before, and they're probably doing it now, and it's going to be a sad case if something does happen. God forbid, I hope it doesn't. But if something does happen, it's going to be due to this failed border policy.
Yeah, and to make it even more of a slap in the face, we're just about out of time here, but to make it even more of a slap in the face, I got to throw this in. some cities are looking at hiring illegal migrants to be their police force on their police force because they can't recruit. How ridiculous is this?
What we have to do is we need real police reform, and there's ways to do it. And I'm hopeful that maybe the next time I'm on your show, I can talk about my plan for real sustainable police reform.
I like the sound of that, Mark. I think that's going to be an excellent conversation. It's the logical next step to this, because we had problems, but now we're just making our problems worse. We're politicizing everything. We're throwing all these other variables into the mix and just telling everybody it's all about the good feels. Mark Powell, thank you so much for everything you do, and thank you for continuing to join us right here on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.